Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, second canto, chapter 3, entitled Pure Devotional Service, text number 9. Raja kamo mande manam niritim tabicharanye kama kamo jitsumam akama purusham param Raja kamo. Anyone desiring an empire or kingdom.
Manus.
Semi-incarnations of God.
Devan.
Demigods.
Niritin. Demons.
But. Abhicharan. Desiring victory over the enemy.
Yajet.
Should worship. One who desires sense gratification.
Yajet.
Should worship.
Sovam.
The demigod named Chandra.
Akamaha.
One who has no material desires to be fulfilled.
Purusham,
Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Param,
the Supreme. Translation. One who desires domination over a kingdom or an empire should worship the Manus. One who desires victory over an enemy should worship the demons. And one who desires sense gratification should worship the moon. But one who desires nothing of material enjoyment should worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purport. For a liberated person, all the enjoyments listed above are considered to be absolutely useless. Only those who are conditioned by the material modes of external energy or are captivated by different types of material enjoyment. In other words, the transcendentalist has no material desires to be fulfilled, whereas the materialist has all types of desires to be fulfilled. The Lord has proclaimed that the materialists who desire material enjoyment and thus seek the favor of different demigods, as above mentioned, are not in control of their senses, so give themselves to nonsense. One should therefore not desire any sort of material enjoyment, being sensible enough to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The leaders of nonsensical persons are still more nonsensical because they preach openly and foolishly that one can worship any form of demigod and get the same result. This sort of preaching is not only against the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita or those of the Srimad Bhagavatam, but it is also foolish, just as it is foolish to claim that with the purchase of any travel ticket one may reach the same destination. No one can reach Bombay from Delhi by purchasing a ticket for Baroda. It is clearly defined herein that persons impregnated with different desires have different modes of worship. But one who has no desire for material enjoyment should worship the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna, the Personality of Godhead. And this worshipping process is called devotional service. Pure devotional service, men, means service to the Lord without any tinge of material desire, including desire for fruitive activities and empiric speculation. For fulfillment of material desires, one may worship the Supreme Lord, but the result of such worship is different, as will be explained in the next verse. Generally, the Lord does not fulfill anyone's material desires for sense enjoyment, but he awards such benedictions to worshippers of the Lord, for they ultimately come to the point of not desiring material enjoyment. The conclusion is that one must minimize the desires for material enjoyment, and for this, one should worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. who's described here as Param, or beyond any material. Sripad Sankaracharya has also stated, Narayana Paro Vyaktat, the Supreme Lord, is beyond the material and circumstance.
Om Ajnana Timirandasya Gyananana Svapya Shakshurana Nivikandina Tasmai Sri Chaitanya Nistam Stavatamena Tadehi Svayam Vahadamya Dadati Svapanantikam Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangam Nangayate Girimit Kripitaman Vande Sri Guru Dinatarimam Sri Chaitanya Nistam Paramanamadavam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasadi Gaura Bhaktavim
Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
So we continue in this chapter to highlight the same point, that worship of the demigods produce fruits that are really temporary and not meaningful. Although, you know, some big things are mentioned here. I mean, dominion over a kingdom or an empire. I mean, that's more than what an ordinary person has. No, we're not all kings and queens, and very rare. But even that is nothing. Even that is nothing. So having opulence so much greater than we have ourselves, then even that is meaningless. So that's sometimes a little tempting to the mind. Imagine if I was a rich man, then the mind is a little attracted. But even that, totally insignificant, meaningless, not worth pursuing. Victory over enemies. Prahlad Maharaj has described this concept of having enemies as pasubuddhi, or an animalistic type of consciousness. Actually, it's said that Yudhisthira Maharaj was ajatashatru. Ajatashatru means he had no enemies. Although clearly Duryodhana was acting inimical towards Yudhisthira, but it said Yudhisthira himself was ajatashatru. He had no enemies. He was the well-wisher of everyone. He was not Duryodhana's enemy. Not at all. From his point of view, he was ready to be kind to anyone and everyone. And in that way, he took, later, after the battle of Kurukshetra, he took very nice care of Dhritarashtra and was very affectionate towards Dhritarashtra. He never thought that, oh, actually Dhritarashtra is the real cause of the whole battle of Kurukshetra, if you think of it. Because Duryodhana was impossible, but Dhritarashtra never stopped him. He could have stopped him. And the real cause of the war is Dhritarashtra, because he didn't stop Duryodhana. He just let him do it. He had the authority. He could have just said, no, forget it. And that would have been it. But instead, he gave Duryodhana more and more room to misbehave. So Dhritarashtra was responsible for all the misery, for all those who had been killed. But Yudhisthira never got into that mood of pointing the finger. Rather, he appreciated Dhritarashtra. He took care of us when we were young. When our father had died, he somehow or other took care of us. Yes. Therefore, we're greatly indebted to him. And then Dhritarashtra quits home, that chapter in the first canto. And then Dhritarashtra had left. And Yudhisthira is very upset. Where is he? And he was overwhelmed, pure devotee. And he is totally depressed, he's totally emotionally overwhelmed because someone left. What is this? Family attachment? Isn't that condemned? No, it is said, it is natural. It is natural
that there is family affection, that there is affection. So Yudhisthira was soft-hearted. Yudhisthira did not see enemies. Seeing any friends and enemies, Pasubuddhi, Pasubuddhi, this animalistic consciousness, Prabhupada so many times said, like cats and dogs, a society of cats and dogs. It was one of his favorite sayings, you know, cats and dogs, many times you hear it. Sort of rascal and cats and dogs, those things that would come out, you know, in Prabhupada's lectures. What to say? But Prabhupada had the power to call people rascals, because in front of him everyone could realize, I am a rascal. Ravindra Sarup brought a professor in Hinduism, and he was introduced to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada asked him straight away, he said, what is the definition of Hinduism? And then the professor said, that is hard to say. Prabhupada looks at like, what is this? He turns to Sarup Damodar, his disciple, he introduces him, he says, he's also a PhD. Sarup Damodar, what would you call that? Cheating, Prabhupada, cheating. That's right, Prabhupada said. Cheating. Professor in Hinduism cannot even give a definition of Hinduism. What is that? Right? Cheating. Then within moments, the professor and Prabhupada had a serious argument. And they were raising their voice to each other. And then Brahmananda, who usually was enormous and used to be a wrestler, Brahmananda came up to the professor and said, you better get out of here before you make more offenses. Right? The professor looked at Brahmananda and got the point. just got up and left. 20 years later, Ravindra Sarup met the professor. The professor says, oh, remember when I was Swami Bhaktivedanta? Ravindra was like about ready to sink into the ground. And then the professor said, you know, he was right. He said he was right. Yes. So that's the power of purity. The power of purity. Then one can say rascal. Then one can do so many things. In MIT, Massachusetts, Institute for Technology, very prestigious place in Boston, Prabhupada was arguing with an Indian man who was highly qualified in scientist, and this man was just a hardcore impersonalist. And Prabhupada said, it's all one, and he grabbed him by the shirt and he shook him and he said, is this a shirt or a ball of cotton? Finally the man said, a shirt. And then Prabhupada said, then don't say it's all one. Like that. Right? Afterwards, Prabhupada said, he said, children and old men can get away with anything. So, Prabhupada was such a nice person, you know, a man of character, you know. Not someone who was always politically correct, but just someone who stood up, you know. There's Bodhisattva's story also of Kobe in Japan. They went to Kobe in Japan, and the devotees had cultivated someone in Kobe, a wealthy man, also Indian man, wealthy man who was ready to give a house for a temple. And it was all sort of ready to go, and then Prabhupada was supposed to come to sort of clothe with a big program and then charm the man, and then, okay, they would ask him for the house. So everything was lined up and ready to go. And then there was the program, and there was a big Vyasasan with the picture of the man's guru on it and a small one. Then they were going to have a program with two speakers, Prabhupada and one Swami from India. So the devotee said, yeah, but Prabhupada cannot sit on that small Vyasasan. He's a Jagat Guru, he has to sit on this big Vyasasan. So they convinced the men. Then the men said, okay, well then both the speakers can sit on the big piazza. So then the program started and Prabhupada was asked to speak first. So the host welcomed him and guided him to the Vyasa Sala, and Prabhupada was seated there and gave the lecture. And then after the lecture, the host invited Prabhupada to come down so that the Indian Swami could sit on there, and Prabhupada didn't come down. He didn't. He just stayed in the Vyasa Sala. So the men again, he just smiled. Stayed on the Vyasa Sala. So finally, they had to put the other Swami on the small one. Prabhupada sitting there. And then the man gives an Hindi lecture. So in about 10 minutes, everything fine. Then suddenly Prabhupada says to the devotees, Kirtan, Kirtan. And they say, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. You know, the Swami tune and the Swami step and everything. And drowned out the man's lecture. And that was it. And then Prabhupada answered. He said, for the first 10 minutes it was okay. But then he said, you know, that actually it is all one and so on. Kirtan, Kirtan. He just drowned it out. And he drowned it out. And he didn't care. That man was extremely upset. What your guru did. Prabhupada didn't care. He could not be purchased by a house, you know, to allow blasphemy of Krishna. See, this is so nice, right? So endearing, you know. For that, you know, Prabhupada will get so many houses. Right? For that, he got houses everywhere, for that purity, because people could recognize it. He cares about Krishna. He doesn't care about making some material compromise to flatter people and pacify them for the money. Well, it's all one. Well, in a sense it is. Hare Krishna, after all, Mr. Agarwal, it is of course very nice. And what about the house? Yes, Irsama, Prasadam from the Mandir. Now can we talk about the house? See, this kind of mentality was not there in Prabhupada. Not at all. And that was the purity that people could recognize. He chose for Krishna. In Amsterdam it was also like that, because during the opening of the temple, things went wrong. You know, one devotee was supposed to build an altar, another devotee was supposed to carve a deity of Lord Jagannath, but they didn't speak with each other. And when the one who made Lord Jagannath came to the shop, there was a block of wood which was much bigger than the original plan. He said, Jagannath wants to be big. He made him big, but he never told the devotee building the altar. So during the installation, they found out the altar was too small, so they had to break it. And the television was there. And just 1 month before, the Maharishi Yogi had been there, who was very smiley and like bubbly. And then the Hare Krishna Guru came. So everyone wanted to now see the Hare Krishna Guru. And the Hare Krishna Guru was being filmed, and he was angry. When all this hammering was going, what is this? How is this possible? This is ridiculous. This cannot be. Then he asked for, there were no fruits for Yajna. Where are the fruits? One Mataji goes to the kitchen, she doesn't come back. It's very annoying if you send someone and they don't come back. So then he sent someone after the person. They also didn't come back. So you can imagine, by then, he was getting really agitated. Where are the fruits? Finally they come, and they bring fruit salad. And Prabhupada looks at it and goes, this is totally useless. Mataji crying. Everything. Whole drama. Oh my God. He was so angry. Everybody got it. Everybody got chastised. And then at the end, there was a new bhakta. He also had some anger problems. So he raised his hands. Question, yes. Why are you so angry? He said, and
then he gave the advice. He said, just chant Hare Krishna.
And Prabhupada took his beads and started chanting. Now,
that, you know, several people, when they saw that, they joined.
They became devotees because they saw
he's not fake, he's not trying to make a show for anyone. He just cares about Krishna and in front of TV. That sort of smile that is glued on there,
not on Prabhupada's face. He didn't care. He didn't care about the TV, about the millions of viewers. He cared about Krishna and that Krishna was comfortable. It was not a show. It was for real. And that is wonderful, that one chooses for Krishna and no other calculations, you see.
And that is the spirit of this chapter. This chapter is one by one going about great material benefits. And of course, it speaks about the worship of the demigods, and maybe in India that still makes some sense. In the West there is demigod worship has long been stopped, you see. In the Western world, demigod worship has been stopped for a few thousand years, because when Christianity came, they systematically got rid of demigod worship before it was there. But then it stopped. It still emerges in some places. Like, for example, a country which became the last country in Europe to become Christian was Finland. It's an interesting country. People were mainly living in the forests or some agriculture, kind of very basic life. And they only, around the year 1000, took up Christianity. So they had 1,000 years less. And there you still find some belief in elves and all these kind of creatures, right? That there are 33 million demigods, there are 33 principal demigods, and these are assisted by many smaller demigods. Like yesterday, we were reading about the Marut Devam, and I didn't comment on it, but I'll do it today. The Maruts are like smaller demigods who are assisting, they're assisting Indra. So there are many, many devas. There are the main demigods, but then there are many smaller devas. So this idea that the elves are protecting plants and so on, there is truth to that. Yeah? My little protective little angel here and there, yes, your little elf, all these fairy tales are true after all. See? Your childhood delusion that it was all just a fairy tale. Now the truth comes out. It's true after all. Elves exist. Now you know. Just see. Yes. And in countries like, in some countries, the belief is still there. In the north of Scotland, they had a community, and still have it, called Findhorn. And in this place, they were worshipping elves and these kinds of creatures. And what happened was that it was a little farm community, small, but they started to grow all kinds of things out of season. They had flowers that never grew in Scotland because it's very cold there and it's high. And they had all kinds of fruits and things that were growing there out of season. So they did all these pujas, and then they extended it to everything. They worshipped everything. They worshipped the cash register, they worshipped the cars, they worshipped everything. But the idea there was some deity behind it. And, yes. But they got results. That was the thing. That was the thing that attracted attention. Even today, you can Google it, Findhorn, and you will find a description about this community which has success. Yes, demigod worship works if you do it properly. Oh yes, you can get results from it. Oh yes. Oh yes, and it's easy, relatively. You don't have to completely change your life, you see. What you basically have to, you have to do the particular sacrifice. But you do not have to alter your whole life for it. Alright, some piety is recommended, but it's not like Krishna consciousness, you know, which touches every aspect of your life and you have to change everything. So it's much easier, this demigod worship. Why are people worshipping Krishna in the first place? So much trouble. So why don't we all just go back to worshipping the demigods? Why not? That is being torpedoed here in this chapter. That is systematically, chapter after chapter, being hammered on the head. If we have like a little bit of that kind of inclination and sort of thing, why not? Why not get a few material blessings? You fool. What is in between your ears? Kuch hai? Is there anything there? In between? Or is it hollow? Big echo. What can be said? If there is any intelligence, then one has foresight. They say if you want to catch a monkey, if anyone ever wants to catch a monkey, I don't know if you want, but yeah, if you want, then there is a trick that you can employ. The trick is, well, in India they have these bars, you know, or in Africa the bushmen, they make a hole and a narrow hole. And then you put, so it's the bars or the hole, it's a narrow passageway where the head just goes through. And then you put a banana on the other side. The monkey wants to steal the banana. He puts his hand through the narrow passageway, grabs the banana. But now, because he holds the banana, the hand is bigger. And the hand doesn't go out. And then, yeah, then his hand is caught for a moment. And at the same time, he doesn't want to let go of the banana. He has the banana now. He's attached to the banana. So he's caught. And just then, you know, he stands there caught, he pulls, he's caught. That's when you catch him. You grab the monkey, bang. And that's I heard the story from Prabhupada, and I saw a movie of bushmen in the Kalahari Desert who used the same tactic. So monkeys somehow or other get caught by their attachment, literally. It's interesting, see. So this is what will happen. We will become caught by our attachment. So one has to be careful. Therefore, to worship for material benefits, even if they are big ones, it's just a waste of time, waste of energy. And that is what we are seeing. Don't waste our energy. With intelligence, with foresight, calculating things for the long term. What is the long term benefit? That is the intelligent approach in everything. So not just do it, right? As is being advertised, not just become impulsive. Or act upon the spur of the moment. No. Consider what are the consequences of your actions and act in a constructive way. Build your life. That is the idea. A spiritual life, we must construct a spiritual life. It is interesting that the nectar of devotion, or the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, is in the third verse. Compared to a Vishram Mandir, or a temple where we can take shelter, where we can find peace and rest, like that. And then if you look at an actual devotion, it's like a whole set of favorable injunctions of activities that must be performed and of prohibition. So, in this way we construct a spiritual life. We put favorable activities, anukul yena krishna nushilanam, activities that are favorable for the service of Krishna, we put them in our life, and some things we kick them out. Just like the shoes are out, outside the temple. So there are things that must be out of our life, out these things. No, we don't do them. We don't touch them. And then we construct a life of positive things. So systematically one must build his spiritual life. And if, of course, if you make me give class every day, I'm going to repeat some things. It's going to because on the same topic day after day. So some things, as I said, that we are we cannot just the point is, we make our arrangements to strengthen our spiritual life. It's not possible by a decision. It is said Krishna Anushilana. It is said by cultivation. Because we are weighed down by our previous sinful activities. We carry the weight of so many previous sinful activities, and that's still in our consciousness. And therefore, when we see something material, we can become attracted. In France, one boy approached Prabhupada and said that when I'm, you know, I'm trying to be a devotee, and I'm trying to chant, I'm trying to do everything, but these thoughts of my previous activities, my previous sinful activities, keep on coming back. And it's very disturbing. And why, when I'm sincerely trying to be a devotee? And Prabhupada said, the memories of these things are coming back to remind you that you should never do these things again. That was a good answer. Yeah. It is a fact. We should say goodbye to certain things. But because the sinful remnants are in the heart, the inclination is there, and when we get confronted with sinful activities, you go, oh, take it away. Like an alcoholic. You know, oh, take that bottle away. I can't stay in this house as long as this bottle is here. It's got to go. Alcohol is there's nothing wrong with alcohol. What's wrong with alcohol? The only thing, it's not for the inside, it's for the outside. That's all. It's fine. You know, it's okay on the outside, but not for the inside of the body. That's the problem. So, why do you have to take it away? If someone gives you a bottle of whiskey as an offering to Krishna, see, this is my offering, what will you do? This is my throw it away. Maybe I will accept it. I will say, oh, thank you very much. That's very nice. And next time I cut myself, I use it as disinfectant. It works very well. So, in this way, these things have you ever. What is good, what is bad? It is how you use it in the service of Krishna. One Mayavadi. Also another program with many speakers, different Swamis, and one Mayavadi Swami was also speaking, and this time, no kirtan, nothing happened. But what happened this time, at the end, the Mayavadi Guru, he came and he presented Prabhupada with a brochure, and he said, oh, here, this is my brochure, this is my ashram, this is my preaching, my brochure. Prabhupada said, oh, very nice. Then the man, he said, yes, I'll give you a whole box. And he gave Prabhupada a whole box. whole box of groceries. So Prabhupada told his disciples, he said, you please look after this box. And he says, take care of this box. So then the next Sunday, Prabhupada asked for the box. He said, where is the box? So, Prabhupada bring. So they brought the box. And then Prabhupada said, now distribute the brochures. And all the guests got the brochure. Mayavadi brochure. Total impersonalism. And everyone is getting a brochure. And the devotees are looking, my God, what's going on? He's giving everyone an impersonalist brochure. And Prabhupada is asking, he said, did everyone get one? Did everyone get a brochure? And it was one of those that you fold open in three. And everyone said, yes, yes, we all got. Prabhupada said, okay, now fold it open. The devotees are looking, what's happening, what's happening? Prabhupada said, fold it open, put it in front of you on the ground. And then he told the devotees to serve prasadam on that. And use that plate. So, and you can see, Prabhupada saw. He saw that actually this Mayavadi is, of course, totally covered with Mayavad. But actually, he's otherwise a good-natured man. He's not a bad-natured man. And he is actually giving these brochures out of the kindness of his heart. Nothing, no politics, out of the kindness of his heart. So Prabhupada is thinking, how can I accept this offering? And he accepted it. And he just, by some trick, engaged it in the service of Krishna. So that this man would get some mercy. Just see. What a vision. This is the exalted, transcendental vision. Not the small time vision. Oh, there's a Mayavadi brochure. Oh, we have to burn it. Okay. At least, thank you for the box.
Very nice. Let me burn it.
That's why I'm not brochures in the world. You got rid of it. No, Prabhupada's thinking, no. How can I deliver this man? How can I make him begin his devotional service? So it's a nice. How nice is a non-envious mentality? How nice is that? That one truly is the well-wisher of someone else. Just see how nice, what a nice well-wisher Prabhupada is. That's what you can become when you give up selfishness. But as long as you worship the demigods, you will strengthen your selfishness. What's in it for me? Yes. Anything possible. One thing that's also interesting is that in India, Prabhupada attracted men, you know, like who were special. He attracted very principled people. And we had some of these old life members, who became a member in Prabhupada's time and who were really like Prabhupada men. And they were another generation, a generation that doesn't exist in India anymore today. Right? There was a generation, you know, you could give them a lot of money to keep for you and then just come back and say, can I have my money? And they would just give it, right? Now, you know, you wouldn't want to do that, right? You would want a paper signed and preferably stamped paper, official legal paper, notarized witnesses and whatever fingerprints on it and whatever you can get. Because otherwise, you know, I will give it back next week. Yes, we just need some time to arrange the money, and next week he's gone, he's not there, and so on. And now we are, now it's yes. Will you come? Will you come? Yes, I will come. He says yes, and he already means no. There's not no sincerity at all. He just says yes. It doesn't even touch his heart. There's even the thought of really sincerely saying yes doesn't. It just comes off his tongue. The yes is on his tongue. It doesn't even touch his brain. Yes. Can we have it? Yes. And he doesn't mean a word. Nothing.
mean, lying doesn't even involve his brain anymore. It's become part of his tongue. He has a forked tongue. Like, it's like one particular creature has a tongue like that. So, this is... Therefore, this fruitive mentality, it goes hand in hand with becoming envious. It goes hand in hand with being envious, because we don't care about anybody. We don't care, just care about myself. Care about nothing, nothing else. What do I care? They can suffer. Suffers. You know, too bad for them. The slows, you know. The slows will suffer. Those, you know. You gotta be quick. You gotta be smart. You know. I'm doing well. My profit. So that's envious. In this way, we just cause suffering in the world. We contribute to the suffering in the world. And that is envious. And that will increase. And we become more hard-hearted and we'll care less and less about suffering. And in this way, demigod worship actually makes us hard-hearted. It increases our material desires and increases our envy. But what is the benefit of that? Therefore, cheating worship. Leave it. Leave it. Oh, but how can I leave it? My family, how can I leave it? How can I leave it? And what did we have to leave, right? Who came from the Western background? I mean, when you were a devotee of Durga and you become a devotee of Shiva, okay, you become a devotee of Krishna. That's a step, but it's within the same culture. It's still within the same Vedic culture. We, you know, like when Kirtanananda dressed up like this, they put him in a mental hospital. He was one of the first devotees walking around like this. They put him in the mental hospital. You know, this guy is lock him up. Just, it's crazy. Right? I mean, lock him up. When Satsarup told his father that he was getting involved with the Swamiji and that he was getting serious about it, his father basically told him, he said, you choose, it's the Swami or me. It's the Swami or us. If you go with the Swami, you don't have to come home anymore. And he chose for the Swami. And he never went back home anymore. That was it. He had to break with his parents for that. Who will do that now? Who has such sincerity? Oh, so difficult. But just see, these early devotees, what sacrifices they made. And we, small ones, say, oh, so difficult, so difficult. Oh, I don't know. Just see. Yes, so with courage, we go forward. With courage, we choose for Krishna. Giving up material security, not only material enjoyment, but also material security, and putting our faith in Krishna, he will take care of us. He will. He does. Who will take care of me in my old age? Krishna. Who will take care of me in a foreign country? Krishna. Right? Yeah. And the devotees. Yeah. And just like that, here we have the Hare Krishna temple. Nothing to worry about, you know. It's easy. You just, on your phone, you just download the address list of the Hare Krishna temples, wherever you are. And there's always one nearby. Not too far. I travel around the world. It's tough. It's tough. Because sometimes it's hard to find a temple. So austere, you know. Come in a new city, and it's just hard to find a temple. But even then, you know, many years ago, I came to Bangkok and there was no temple yet, but I got an address of a devotee who had a shop. So I went there with my former wife at the time, and we came there to this shop. And Indian shop. And he's trying to say, yes, what would you like? We say, Hare Krishna. He said, oh, wait a minute. He goes behind the counter. We stand there. And then suddenly the Govindam tape starts playing. Go Govindam. And then behind the counter, at the top, there were some curtains. I didn't see it before. But suddenly the curtains open, and there are the deities and the whole thing. And we stand there, go in the Hare Krishna in the shop. There are devotees everywhere. There are devotees everywhere. There's nothing to worry about. Prabhupada took care of everything. One more story. Similar, we were traveling and we went to Italy, to Rome. And, you know, I had the Back to Godhead magazine with me with the address list inside and went to the temple, took a taxi to the temple. It was an expensive taxi also. We come to the temple. There's a sign that said, the temple is closed. I look around, temple's closed, nothing, empty building. My God, what's going on? No new address, nothing. God, Italy, you know what I mean? And then, it's all like pasta and pizza, but where's the address? Anyway, no address of the new temple, so what to do? Anyway, there was a restaurant, you know, like, okay, well, let's try the restaurant. Restaurant also closed. I said, God, what do we do now? And I had to check into a hotel, you know, spend a lot of money. Nothing to eat, nothing vegetarian to eat. There was one restaurant, they had some fruits in the window. I said, can we... I tried to buy them. They said, no, they're for decoration. Started. Anyway, I bought them for a big price. And I had to really offer serious, because my former wife was hungry and I had to supply. So it cost you. So I gotta eat something. And okay. You know, that was it. It cost me that fruit, you know. Anyway, then finally in the hotel, then on the second day, we met a devotee who turns out to have a hotel also, two blocks away. And we come in this hotel, he takes us to his hotel. We come there, and my wife says, is there some prasad? And he pulls out this huge tray of maha. And I tell you, the world is okay. It's okay. There are devotees. We are not alone anywhere in the world. Don't worry. We're taken care of. Taken care of. Everything is fine. Nothing to worry about. Just take shelter of Krishna and his devotees. Okay. Thank you very much. Any questions?
Someone has some pictures or deities of demigods in their house, what they should do with them. What's your suggestion?
Talk to you about it. If anyone has pictures of demigods in their house, what should they do about it? Talk to Dural about it. You can take his number anytime.
Too controversial?
No. You know, why is it controversial? Why is it controversial? I mean, I think it's crystal clear. We have been...
Just put them away in a drawer or something.
Talk to Dual about that.
Some people bring their old deities of Ganesh to the temple in Sydney and just leave them around. I don't know why.
Yeah.
Is that okay to have that?
That we should have them in the temple? No, we should not. We should pass them on. Then we go to some demigod temple and leave them there. No. We don't need to keep deities of the demigods in our temples.
That's what I thought. I was just checking with you.
You're just checking.
Double checking.
Or were you getting me into trying to... Was it politics?
No, I thought I had this problem. When I was younger, I didn't have pictures in the temple, but I've seen them somewhere here and there, so...
The thing is that whatever we do, it has to be done in a loving way. And a loving way means to respect people's feelings. And that's sensitive. Not that we mark, wherever there's a demigod picture in the house, we march upon this house with big boots on and go, out. What is this? Not that. in spreading the Krishna consciousness movement. It won't go far that way. So with love and with intelligence, and it has to be done. With love, you have to be individually sensitive. You know, when you ask the what to do questions, what to do in such and such situation questions, right? The what to do in such and such situation questions are basically calling for a policy. A policy is a general rule which can apply to many situations. But policies have an impersonal element to them, you see. Because every situation is different. And actually, if you really do it nice and right, you can use a policy sort of for yourself, but every situation ultimately needs a tailor-made solution. Because that will conquer the heart. If you come with a policy, you know, it is the policy of our temple that anyone who becomes involved in Krishna consciousness has to remove all the demigod pictures from our house. We'll do it, but we won't love you for it. But if you come with a tailor-made solution, with kindness, then it may go a long way. That may go much further. But respecting the demigods, yes. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to various Shiva temples. He offered his respects. When Prabhupada was in Vrindavan, he was with the devotees in the gardens of the Ranganath temple. And then just there, as they were walking, there was a little door. It was open on the side, on the boundary wall. So many rooms, and one little door was half open. And Prabhupada went there, and there was a deity of Durga. And Prabhupada apparently knew it, because he knew Vrindavan. He knew. He opened that door, and then he did full dandavat. No. Should we, Hare Krishnas, do full dandavat to Durga? What do you think?
When? Can you tell me?
No, I will not tell you. What do you think? Okay, blah, 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 blah. What do you think?
I don't know. I wouldn't if I didn't know about this story now, I wouldn't have.
You wouldn't have.
So I think it's very strange. I don't know anything about it.
Yeah. But ultimately, one who sees very transcendental can see Durga Devi is also an expansion of Mahalakshmi. And yes, in Vishnu Purana it is explained. Just as Mahavishnu is expanding himself, Krishna expands himself into Mahavishnu. Then from Mahavishnu come so many forms. When Mahavishnu becomes Sadashiva, Sadashiva becomes Shiva. We discussed this earlier on. But at the same time, there's also Mahalakshmi. She also expands. And then she becomes Durga. And so when Sadashiva, when Vishnu Tattva becomes Shiva Tattva, that's when she becomes Shakti Tattva. She becomes Durga. See? Interesting, yeah? So, with the transcendental vision, one can appreciate Durga also. But we are not doing puja. We're not doing puja. And we don't take the prasad. We do not take demigod prasad. Whenever we go to a demigod mandir and they try to give us the prasad, today I'm just fasting. Every Monday I'm fasting. But then you have to fast every Monday. You have to be careful. But somehow or other, don't take it. But if it's first offered to Krishna and then given to the devotees, then we can take. But prasad we don't take. Because we said yesterday, if yanti deva deva vratam, if you are worshipping the demigods, you will attain the demigod. You have to be a little careful.
Yes. Yes. Yes, they do it there, and in other temples also, in India. This is, it is done. It is done. The temple of that the prasadam from Vishnu is offered to the demigods. Yes. That's all right. Mm-hmm. Elves.
Yes, and things like that. Can they assist us in our devotional service, or we should just ignore them altogether?
Ignore them. We should, because it's the same. Like we do not turn to them because it may shift our faith. You see, that's the issue. We may shift our faith. So better we just let those things sleep, you know, let that rest. Some people they are a little mystic, and they also have some sort of they experience something of this higher world, of this. They experience the demigods not only in the form of the deity, but also in the form of some subtle presence. And that can be. But we just let those things go. Only Krishna. Kinchit kevalaya bhaktya vasudeva parayana. Only, exclusively. Kevala. Kevala means only, exclusively. Anya Vilasata, so only Krishna. Yes?
Does this Kevalam not mean seeing Krishna in everything?
Doesn't what mean seeing Krishna?
Seeing Krishna in everything?
The beginning I missed.
The Kevalam as you
Kevalam.
Yeah. So should we not see Krishna in everything?
Kichit Kevalai Bhaktya Vasudeva Parayana. There is Bhaktya, so it doesn't say seeing. Where does it say seeing? Kevala bhaktya. I didn't say kevala dristi or anything like that. Where do you get seeing from? I see bhaktya there. Kichit kevalai bhaktya. Bhaktya, it speaks about bhakti. It's only bhakti, only devotional service to Krishna. Only serve. It doesn't say only see or see Krishna everywhere. It's not only serve Krishna. So bhaktya is very clear. And in that way become absorbed in Vasudeva. Kechit kevalai bhaktya Vasudeva parayana. Bhaktya. Yes. Yeah, you.
Maharaj, is there anything outside the boundary of Sankirtan in Krishna consciousness?
Well, Sankirtan has a very broad definition. So, is there anything outside the boundary of Sankirtan in Krishna consciousness? The Sankirtan touches every aspect of life because everything has its Hari Sambandha Vastu. Everything has a form which is connected with the Lord. Yes. You just, like I gave the example of the whiskey, right? You just have to have the intelligence to see it. How this whiskey can be used in the service of Krishna, right? On the outside of the body, not on the inside. Fine. So, if you see the Hari Sambandha Vastu of everything, or how things can be used in the service of Krishna, then everything becomes used for Sankirtan. And that is called Yukta Vairagya. See? So this Yukta Vairagya, so not just Vairagya, or only these things, just a few, that is part of the Sankirtan movement, that is Krishna conscious and everything else, Maya, Maya, and we have to live like this, Hare and Krishna, and don't look left, don't look right, and keep your world very narrow, and sort of sit all together, like, watch out, you know, Maya is everywhere, and we are Hare Krishna, and we have to be very careful. Hare is Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. No. We can see Krishna everywhere. But at the same time, it depends on our spiritual vision and on our spiritual strength. When Prabhupada was in California, He went to the Morning Star Range. The Morning Star Range was a hippie commune, and the thing was in this hippie commune that many people were walking around naked. So Prabhupada drives in with the car, and there's a naked boy, a man, working in the garden. Prabhupada winds down the window of the car, and he says, "What are you doing?" And the boy says, "Growing potatoes." And Prabhupada says, "No, with your life." Anyway, Prabhupada preached there, and Prabhupada had kirtan there, and people danced. Naked men and naked women are dancing in front of a sannyasi. What do you think of that? You have to be a very transcendental sannyasi, right, to kind of be able to do that. But what happened? Well, from that place, several people became devotees. Some became leading personalities. Names withheld. So the point is that when the devotee is very powerful, then he can engage so many things of the world. But we are not so powerful, so we have to be a little careful that we say, "Well, I keep my distance from certain things." But if you're a very powerful devotee, then you can engage many things in the service of Krishna. So everything can be included in Sankirtan. But there will be activities that we will reject. Meat eating, we will reject. It is said, of course, Kunti Devi says you have to be a little bit materially exhausted, akinshana gocharam. And then, when you have that kind of material exhaustion, that's when you can approach Krishna with sincere feeling, she is saying. So it begins, material life is frustrating, right? It is. And you try, and you just don't get it. And so it can bring you to a point where you just give up and say, "Really, it's not worth it, forget it." And you get to a point where you just say, "No, I'm no longer interested so much in pursuing all these things because I realize now that real happiness is not there." And that's a point where you are getting materially exhausted. And then still there is the deep desire for real happiness, because by nature the living being is anandamoy vyasat, pleasure seeking. So that desire for real happiness is there. And then when we suddenly see the devotees, like someone was telling me just the other day that, like, you know, somehow or other, they got attracted to the Hare Krishna movement little by little, and one day just started dancing with the Hare Krishnas in the street. You gotta be crazy to start dancing with the Hare Krishnas in the street. But at one point you don't care anymore to be crazy, because there is something in this movement, some purity that sort of appeals to the heart, it wakes up some hope in us. It's possible after all. You walk into this world and you just realize, you know, everybody has ulterior motives, actually. Where is real love to be found? Where is real truth to be found? Where is honesty Where is kindness? Where is mercy? The whole world, money makes the world go around. And you get cynical. You've lost your faith. But the hope in the heart has never died. So Krishna consciousness reawakens that hope. For maybe it's true after all. And that hope that awakens, that brings out a whole wave of sincerity in our heart. And if then we are a little material exhausted, then it's possible. Then it's possible. Then by association, then we get into the association of devotees who are more sincere than us. Me, I was a little materially exhausted. I went to India. I was sitting high in the Himalayas, and I was sitting in this tea stall of Tibetans in a Tibetan village, and they put some butter in the tea, and I was drinking that Tibetan tea, and there were many Western people there, and they were all talking about, are you already studying Tibetan? Are you already doing the meditation course in the library? And I could see, they do it all for status, and all for show. They don't do it out of sincerity. They just do it to impress others. I was not impressed by them. And I left that. And then I thought, yes, these people are actually not sincere. And I thought of myself, yeah, I'm different. I want real spiritual life. I thought of myself, I'm more sincere. But then when I came to the devotees, right, in Vrindavan, and I stayed in the temple, they were too sincere. Yeah. My God, they were just too sincere. That was too much. And it's like, that was a bit much for me. And so then, when we are in the land of the blind, one eye is king. So maybe in the material world we have a little bit of sincerity. But then we come in the association of devotees, and then we see, I have no sincerity at all. They have so much more sincerity than me. And then we become more purified. And like this, sincerity is coming more and more in the association of sincere devotees. Yes.
The process of bhakti, our fearlessness.
Fearlessness. Started with shelter in other things. As a child, you had your mother. Shelter in your mother. And how can you give it up now? And then you have your family. And they've sheltered you. You know, even now, you know. If you get in trouble, if you get really sick or something and you need money, who will help you? Can I come this for me? Maybe. Maybe. Who will pay the bill? I don't know if I will pay the bill. Maybe I'll tell you, Chen Hare Krishna. Say thank you very much, Maharaj. But who's going to pay the bill? Huh? Who's going to pay the bill? If you need some serious medical and you don't have insurance, well, who's going to pay it? But you can go to your family and they will complain. Oh, but at the end, they may help you. Your mother sort of gets involved and somehow or other, the payment is done. See, so you have shelter there. It's real. You have protection there. And you have always had it, as long as you can remember. From day one, you've had it. So you've become dependent on it. So from that safe platform of the shelter we've always had, we venture out and do something brave. Just like a kid that runs away from the mother, falls on its face, turns around and runs back to mommy. He's got to conquer the world, fight the big demon, boom, he falls and comes back, shelter.
adults, is it so different? And when we leave mother, immediately we walk into the arms of our wife, get shelter there. When the whole world is cold and impersonal, there is one person. I will stand by you. I believe in you. I love you. I know that you can do it. I can do it! So you go there for shelter in those arms. So we go for so many shelters. I have Dutch passport. I like it. I rather have Dutch passport than something South American, you know. Sorry about that, but everybody is South American. I don't know, but I rather have Dutch passport because I can go anywhere I like, right? You know, I get the visa waiver, right, for so many countries. So it's easy. So I feel secure. I have it, right? And you know, if everything fails, everything goes wrong, I have credit card. Who can touch me? I have credit card. So many levels of security we all have and we all rely on. So don't ask why. We've always relied on these things, on material things. It's very scary to give it up. But little by little, these things begin to look small. And we realize that real protection comes from Krishna. We become fearless. Krishna will protect me. And if we become advanced, yes, we'll become fearless. Krishna will protect us. But when we are not a devotee of Krishna, who will protect us? I hope my mother will protect me. My mother is dead. Oh my God. My sister, I don't know. She's nuts. She won't go as far as my mother. The devotees, I hope so. Now I'm preaching. Now I'm the nice Swami. Nice class. But what if I can't preach anymore? Will they still take care of me? So it's very difficult, no? To be fearless. Very difficult. One must be really advanced to be fearless. Easier said than done. No. We are born with material support. Born. You're from India. You can go back to India anytime. No problem. And you know, India, at the end of the day, India is one big family. In India, something, you have some protection, India, you're Indian, you can rely on that, isn't it? That sense is very deep, very deep. So to rise above that, not so easy. Okay. A little longer.
I was thinking about Gunamani's question. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we get the signs from Krishna with a question in our head.
Yes.
And sometimes the answer comes through strangers. Sometimes you sit in the train and listen to the talk and you get actually the answer on what you are prepared to.
A sign of God.
Yes. So I was thinking, if we get the signs all sorts of things, like maybe even like Avadhuta Brahmana, what he was learning.
Yes.
Why we should ignore the angels, for example, who are more direct and who know more directly the will of the
Yes.
Lord?
Okay.
Can see angels,
Fine.
but I
understand.
To get more direct answer than guessing what Krishna wants to tell me.
Yes. Yeah, why not? The thing is this, is that why not these angels or these kind of things? Because you can be sure, even in this world, there are demons who present themselves like angels. You think then, if here there are many people who present themselves like angels and yet are demons, you think when the same personalities go into the subtle body region that they will not cheat anymore? So that's one complication. You cannot trust. So you trust in Krishna. But if you get these kind of experiences where you feel it's a sign of God, it's God is communicating with me, Krishna is communicating with me through someone or something, either from within or without, you must confirm it with the spiritual master. That's the point. And then if you confirm it with the spiritual master, fine. In the mid-80s, there was one devotee who had a dream. It was a Prabhupada disciple. He had a dream. And in the dream, Prabhupada came and Prabhupada told him that how the society should be run. And he gave him all the instructions and then he told him that he should tell all the devotees. So he did. And the devotees were not ready to accept it, that this is Prabhupada. They were thinking, this is your mind, you know, and you have colored it with some Prabhupada, but you know, you want to dictate. There was, of course, the whole controversy. Some were saying, no, it is Prabhupada. Others said, no, it's not Prabhupada. Whatever may be, yeah, it must be confirmed by Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Yeah. The Guru is the external manifestation of the Super Soul. So whatever comes internally from the Super Soul, that we must confirm. Once one devotee was upset with me, and he said to me, "Are you the external manifestation of the Super Soul?" I said, "Like, well, between guru and disciple, and the guru disciple relationship is like that." So, for the disciple, yes. He said, "Then how could you tell me that I should cooperate with this temple president, when you knew that I would get in so much trouble?" If you're the external manifestation of the Super Soul. I told him, I said, "I thought that the trouble was good for you. Just what you needed, what you deserved." Because, anyway, bottom line is, we take shelter of the spiritual master. And when we get involved in this subtle realm, where does it come from? Does it come from Krishna? Does it come from the mind? Does it come from subtle beings? Are they good? Are they bad? We don't know where it all comes from. So when you start to get into channeling and into these kind of things, you get into a realm which is obscure. And you don't know actually where it's coming from. Some Indian family once invited me to their house and said, "Can you do kirtan here? You know, my wife..." Then it comes out later. "My wife is regularly seeing Krishna for many years. Krishna came. 12 years ago, Krishna came. And since that time, he's been regularly coming. And Krishna is taking charge of our life." And they were all depressed and all stressed out and unhappy, and something was really wrong. And it wasn't exactly the mood that you should have, the blissful mood you should have when Krishna came. Something else was going on. Yeah. Is it like, you know, better? And then all kinds of things. Krishna told us this cannot be in the house, that cannot be in the house. And it sounded like someone was telling things, and whoever it was, not Krishna. Not Krishna. So Krishna comes through the sun. Okay, let's end. Shiva Prabhupada, Kijaya.